Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and my name is Stuart Thompson, and welcome to Personal Transformation. Today I have Maria, Sabra, and Nicola on my side here with me as well. Today we're going to be talking about depression, all the attachments to it, and we're really going to pick it apart, and we're going to talk about some own personal experiences and all the legalities along with it as well. So hopefully you will get something out of this today. And well, first off, I should put in my own disclaimer. I'm definitely not here to tell you what to do. My experiences are my experiences, same as Nicholas and everybody else's. So folks, if you're unsure about it, check with somebody and make sure you take care of yourself the proper way. And really, really important these days with COVID and that and all the stuff going on, we're going to throw in some self-care there for you as well. But remember, if you're triggered in any way, just turn us off. You can come back and listen to us either through Blog Talk or, as you can see, on Facebook, YouTube, and geez, we're all Periscope. We're all kind of all over the place. Folks, thank you for joining us today, and I'm going to pass it over to Maria, and please introduce yourself.
Hey, Stuart. Hi, I'm Maria Berkowitz, Executive Director of The Gatehouse. We're a charity that helps survivors of closet sexual abuse. And I'm going to bring Sabra on the stream. She is the board director's chair. She's also a registered social worker and a counselor, a psychotherapist. Sabra is here with us today. Hello, Sabra.
Hello, Maria. Hello, Stuart and Nicola. Good to see you. And hello, all listeners. Thank you for this opportunity again. We seem to be meeting quite regularly these last few weeks. So thank you very, very much. I'm going to do it slightly differently this time, if it's okay with everyone. Let's take a few moments to just ground ourselves. So for that, you may choose to close your eyes if you are comfortable closing them. If not, choose a spot in the room that you are sitting and engage your gaze softly on that object to help you focus. Once you've done that, let's take a few intentional, mindful breaths. As you are breathing, notice your breath. Become familiar with your breathing pattern and quality of your breath. There's no need to judge it. Just become familiar. As you're becoming familiar with your breath, think about why you took time to join the program today. And invite yourself your openness to receive as few as just one nugget. You may take more, but one is just good enough. If something surfaces or arises for you during today's program, just as Stuart mentioned, if anything you find triggering, make a mental note, jot it later, after the grounding moment, since you may want to revisit what surfaced for you with your support network, counselor, physician, psychotherapist. And finally, before we rejoin the large group for this program, think about how you will support yourself when something arises within you during this program. Some suggestions for you: you may want to stretch, take a few mindful breaths, get up from your seat, or cradle your head, feel the comfort and your touch, and rejoin the group whenever you feel like. Thank you very much for taking this few seconds to ground yourself. It is always very important to start with grounding when we are engaging in such emotional topics as depression, and there are many more, but today's focus is on depression.
Thank you so much, Barbara, for sharing that with us. I know grounding is something that we do in our programs at the Gatehouse, and it's quite helpful. And we're fortunate we have Nicola, who's part of our volunteer team, who's a mindfulness and yoga practitioner as well. And Stuart has had a wide array of experience, even with martial art too. So he brings that component of groundedness and importance of that before going into these kinds of processes. Thank you for sharing that with us, Sabra. I understand, Sabra, you're going to give us an overview of what is depression to start us off with.
Yes, a very brief overview, and then we'll proceed with questions and sharing some of our experiences as we go along. So often I'm asked, what is depression? And I'd like to start off by saying that almost everyone experiences periods of unhappiness in their lives, created with loss, situational dissatisfaction, despair, financial problems, relationship issues, all what we call part of life and living. But major clinical depression is usually experienced over an extended period of time of despair, hopelessness, and or worthlessness. So it is over an extended period of time of these feelings, and these feelings usually persist. Having said that, it is very important to note that no two people experience depression or its impacts in the same way. Plus, there are many different types of depression. So it is best to have medical professional diagnosis and clarify the specific type depression experiences that you are having from somebody who is trained. And I say medical professional, but I include also in that counselors, psychotherapists, psychologists. So that, in a nutshell, is a very brief overview of what depression is. And I will touch on what the causes, symptoms are as we proceed with this program.
Oh, thank you, Abra, for sharing that. It's important to know what it is and what it isn't. And then one of the indicators that you mentioned is the having a period of time where it's happening. It's very important. It's not the typical, like, we are sad about something, but if we are experiencing these bouts of sadness over more than 2 weeks to 6 weeks to months on end, then we know that there might be something there to talk to a mental health professional about, maybe getting some for yourself. It's not just sadness or grief, as you're going to talk about the difference between these two later on in the program. Thank you for sharing, Sabra. Just want to bring on Stuart and Nicola if they want to make a comment on the overview that Sabra just provided.
Any thoughts?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, first off, myself, I can only too well relate to what Sabra's saying in my own experiences in the past with depression, and even to a degree today. As we are in a lockdown and pandemic, and you know, I've had these things going on, and therefore to balance these out is not that simply easy. Yes, I have great, you know, places to reach out, great grounding practices, but sometimes they don't always work. So today I was really anxious and interested in hearing what Sabra has to say about this, because maybe I'll probably learn something in regards to maybe I can change a thought process along the way as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. Stuart, you raise a very, very important point, and this is why we have such programs that you, Maria, and Nicola put together and then invite me, because I think knowledge sharing, raising awareness is so important, because through this knowledge sharing, what we can do for ourselves, for the and the listeners, is to think about what is being said, if it applies to us, because sometimes we feel that everything is ticked off, yes, all this applies, and sometimes it may be a few, but it raises anxiety. So the best thing to do is to learn from this, with the whole idea that the learning, increasing awareness and knowledge is to empower oneself so that one minimizes the self-blame, the feeling that there's something wrong with me, pathologizing oneself, and feeling that, you know, oh my God, this is the end of, you know, me and everything else. So I think the awareness and knowledge sessions that you provide and organize are very, very important. I would like to, start with, what is the difference between grief and depression? Many of us have experienced one or the other, or both. In my case, actually, my major depression, the first episode of my major depression started with grief. And it evolved into depression because at that time, which was many years ago, did not seek help. And because I did not seek help, the grieving process was not dealt with. I did not engage really fully and authentically with my grief. And that kind of led into depression. So let's start with, what is the difference then? Being sad with grief is not the same as depression. Grief is usually associated with an experience of loss. As I mentioned in my case, it was loss of a very significant person in my life. And it's usually after experiencing any kind of loss, and it's natural. The feeling of grief is natural, it's understandable, and it is unique. So, for example, currently with COVID-19, which continues to disrupt our lives in many ways, many of us are experiencing grief because of the losses that have arisen out of COVID-19. So, for example, the loss of social interaction, face-to-face interaction, the loss of social connectivity, the loss of jobs, the loss of in-homes because of not having a job, not having an income. So you can see that grief is often and is usually associated with loss. Both grief and depression may entail intense sadness and isolation. Yet grief is different in that the sadness or pain associated with loss comes in waves and does not last for extended periods. As Maria mentioned, that it's important to know whether I'm experiencing the sadness. Is it going on for 2 weeks? Is it 4 weeks? Is it 6 weeks? Is it longer? And if it is longer, we definitely need to seek some help. Going back to loss usually decreases over time, whereas depression and the sadness associated with depression seems to be more persistent and pervasive over a duration of time. The other big difference that is very important to keep in mind, that with loss, one's self-esteem is not really questioned or in question, whereas with depression, it is often a huge and a major symptom or manifestation of depression, where one questions one's self-esteem, one's self-worth, so on and so forth. Plus, the other major difference is that with loss and depression, people often ask me, well, you know what? What about thoughts of death and dying? People, when they are grieving, think about death and dying. Yes, that can be true. However, the difference is that in grief, you usually think of death and dying from the perspective of wanting to join the loved one that one has lost. Whereas with depression, the difference is that death and dying is thought of as an end or as a means of ending what everyone is experiencing. And that is huge. So, recap, grief is a natural response to any loss, including behavioral, cognitive, emotional, physical, and spiritual experience of loss. Depression is persistent, pervasive feeling of sadness, often with profound loss of interest in activities, in things that usually have brought one pleasure in the past. Plus, it affects how one feels about oneself, and it could interfere quite significantly in how one can perform one's everyday routine, or it really disrupts one carrying on one's daily life. So not everyone, again, is affected the same way, and therefore the seeking help and clarification from a clinician, a counselor, a therapist, a psychologist, or a medical professional psychiatrist is important, because left untreated, it can make things worse, as has happened in my own personal experience, both with grief and with depression. So, I will turn it to Maria. Maria, do you want to share any of your experience with either grief or depression?
Sure, Sabra, thank you for sharing your story with everyone. Because I know by us sharing our experiences, we may be helping others find their voice to share their experiences and maybe seek help for the first time. So, thank you for your courage and strength in sharing about your story with grief and depression. Most definitely, Sabra. I want to add a couple of things, that grief is one potential trigger for depression. There could be relationship conflict, workplace stress, financial losses. Sometimes when you're diagnosed with an illness can trigger depression, trying to deal with the new reality of the illness and trying to adjust or adapt your life to the illness, whether that's, you know, multiple sclerosis or scoliosis or any of those other life-impacting illnesses out there. One of the things that stood out for me as you were speaking, Sabra, not so much in terms of grief, but actually experiencing depression. Up until this point, it's interesting how your sharing has actually triggered something in my memory of a previous workplace. So workplace stress definitely was occurring there. And up until now, I didn't classify that experience that I had as a result of. I had to take time off work. More than 6 weeks I was off work on sick leave because I was not feeling well. Lots of dizziness, lots of anxiety, lots of body pain as well that surfaced, which are all physical symptoms of depression. So at that time, I didn't classify it as that until now when I looked at the symptoms again and went, oh, you know what, that's probably what was happening. And in conjunction with what we talked about last week, anxiety, right? In conjunction with anxiety and panic, the other physical manifestations too could be attributed to depression due to workplace stress.
Maria, you know, that I'm so glad you, and thank you for sharing your experience, because one of the experiences that I had, and I'm sharing these experiences because I think it's through shared experiences, lived experiences, we learn so much more, and we learn more because it's more meaningful. Although I will mention some statistics later, but let me just pick up on what you said, workplace stresses. The very first time I experienced anything, it was, you know, grief and depression, was when I was bullied at work in the workplace by supposedly another professional. And I say supposedly a professional because you can find many people, regardless of what environment we are working in, that there might be people that can bully others in the workplace. was bullying, depression, or grief were just simply not talked about because of the myths that are surrounding these issues. The myths that there's something wrong with you, and this is why we end up blaming ourselves and keeping quiet about it or being silent. And this is how environments, workplaces, and society and social institutions silence us. So this was my first experience with bullying, and I learned a lot, and I made sure. It took me a long time to recover from it, but I have become very aware and conscious of it. And when people started more recently in the last 10, 15 years talking about it, I said, yes, that resonates, and that's what I learned, and this is what I'm doing to prevent myself from being in that situation again. So stigma and silencing, and as I said earlier on, it's so, so important that this is why we talk about it through such programs. The other thing is that in the workplace, we don't talk about it because we are afraid that we will be pathologized. We are afraid that because we are going to be seen as if something deficient in us. We beat up on ourselves badly enough, but then when we're working in institutions where we are, there's a lot of stigma and taboo attached to mental health, people will not talk about it because they are afraid that they might lose their job. And yet many of us, and I'm a prime example, and I can say this with confidence, that I used every ounce of my energy to do the best work, and I say I did my very best, that people around me did not know for years that I was coping with depression. I used all that energy to do my work, my job, and bear the responsibilities as best as I could, and nobody knew what would happen to me when I got home. The day was over. And I think you know from having worked with me that I give it my all. So talking about physical symptoms of depression, I would come home and I would be so exhausted because I used up all my energy. I spent it in just managing my mood, managing the environment that I was in so that I would not compromise the expectations that I set on myself with regard to the responsibility that I took on to do the job as best as can. So for years, I had to postpone my own goals because of what happened to me while I was depressed. So much so that some of those goals have not been met yet. But someday, I hope I look back and say, yes, I've done it.
Thank you for sharing, Sabra. I just wanted to bring in Stuart Nickel and ask them if they have any thoughts they want to share on what we just talked about.
Actually, for me, when Sabra was explaining initially the difference between grief and depression, I realized I was doing both. I'm relating it to childhood sexual abuse. And initially when I found my voice in 2010, I had to share my story with my family members. So that when I did that, I didn't understand it at the time. However, we disconnected. So because of the disconnection, I experienced grief. However, I thought I was experiencing depression because it lasted for a year. But obviously, that was grief and loss from the lost family members because it was the whole family, not one person stayed in contact. And then the depression from that grief lasted for about a year. So I totally relate to what you were saying earlier on, but realizing that that wasn't depression, it was both. So like, you know, when we initially share our voice and, you know, having done work at the Gatehouse for about 4 years now, there's a commonality in that when we share our part of our story with family members, there is the risk of losing contact with the family members. So quite a common thing. I mean, yes, there are those exceptionally lucky people that get the support. However, unfortunately, my family just didn't have the tools to deal with it because they were in complete shock. Having reconciliated with them 7 years after that fact, it was quite a big learning curve on both sides to be able to provide that understanding for each other and provide complete forgiveness after the fact. So that was quite the work in progress when we were going through that. And it's probably a period of, I don't know, 7 to 9 months where we completed that fully. So, I can totally relate.
Yeah, Nicola, a question comes to mind when you said that you realized that, you know, you had both. So absolutely, grief and depression can coexist, or it can start with grief and it can go into depression.
Yes.
Okay. And grief can be experienced at any time because it's usually associated with an experience of loss.
Yes.
But the question for you from me is, would you like to share with us in terms of, you know, you want to contextualize it as the survivor of childhood sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the experience of loss, or what do you feel you lost as a result of that trauma?
From the experience of childhood sexual abuse, you mean? My voice. Because I'm a quiet child anyway from some physical, like, domestic violence. However, it totally silenced me. I went into my shell like you could never believe. I wouldn't say boo to a goose. I wouldn't even say hello to a safe relative that walked in the door and they were at a family gathering. I would isolate. Like, even going through the whole of high school, I was numb. And I guess that was a form of depression too. I had no thoughts. There was nothing in some periods. And so going through high school, as you can imagine, that was extremely difficult because I had to use my brain. But I was pushing stuff down. But even though I wasn't aware of it, mine couldn't deal with what had gone on. And so it had to suppress, it had to push down. And my way of doing that, I guess, at such a young age was just to silence my head, silence my thoughts. So I guess for me, that was where the trauma surfaced. There was nothing inside that head. And I remember so many times my elder sister saying to me, "It's like a sheep. She doesn't say anything." And that was me. Mm-hmm. That was me for many, many years. Even going through adulthood, actually, I struggled between those periods of silence and periods where I felt confident. And I'd go back and forth for many, many years. And again, I found myself in another relationship that was unsafe. So it escalated, and I would come back and I'd feel good about myself, and it would just go back and forth until I dealt with it. And when I let that truth out, even though I knew I ran the risk of losing my family, the truth set me free. And that was huge. It was huge.
Yeah. Nicola, that is huge. And thank you so much, because by sharing your story, your experience with us, and what came out for you through this experience of self-empowerment and finding your voice, you touched upon so nicely in terms of what we have discussed right from the beginning, the interconnectivity between grief and depression, the loss of voice, and the need for why we need to have these programs so we can empower ourselves, find the kind of support. And the other thing that you mentioned is that connection and interaction and community is so important in healing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the Gatehouse comes in. You know? So thank you so very much for mentioning that. And so for all of us, what's important to keep in mind that, yes, sometimes that we may not get that from our family or the significant people around us, but it doesn't mean that we cannot find support and community outside the family. Because many times, particularly for survivors of trauma, different kinds of trauma, including child sexual and specifically child sexual abuse, finding community outside the family is very, very important and critical. Now, I think it might be a moment where let's just talk about some statistics so that we get an appreciation of the extent of depression in Canada. I looked at it in Canada. I'm focusing on Canada, but let's, for the purposes of our global community that joins us for the statistics, worldwide global statistics, when you compare them, you see that most of the developing countries, including what they call the mid-development countries, are very much the same. So keep that in mind as I share some Canadian statistics. So about 1% of men and 2% of women in Canada are clinically depressed, according to the Canadian Psychological Association. 5% of men and 10% of women in Canada will experience clinical depression at some point in their life. And just as Nicola mentioned, for 1 year she went through that. Some people may go through for a shorter period, some people longer. Like in my case, it was for a longer period. And then I came out of depression and I went into depression. According to the Canadian government, 11% of men and 16% of women will experience major depression in the course of their life. And as I mentioned earlier, please keep in mind that rates are fairly consistent in countries around the world. 34%, this reminds, because Nicola mentioned high school. If memory serves me correctly, about 34 to 35% of high school students in Ontario reported moderate to severe symptoms of depression. 70% of mental health challenges have their onset during childhood or adolescence. This is why it's important to keep in mind. And therefore, it's not surprising that 1 in 5 children and youth experience depression by the age of 18. And I believe there's one more statistic. 4 out of 8 or 1 to 2 ratio out of every 100 children and youth will experience major depression. So these are important statistics just to give us an idea and also to remind us that we're not alone. And by talking about the prevalence of this, is that we can join groups that want to break down the stigma, as is happening in the last few years, which is terrific, that we are beginning to see more and more awareness and a breaking of silence around issues of mental health and mental health issues. So, Maria, would it be time you think would be good for us to take another moment just to think about what might have surfaced? I would like the audience, the participants, and all 4 of us to also just think about how is all of this that we mentioned so far landing on us? What is it surfacing? What is it raining within us? So just think about that in this moment, what I call an embodiment moment, so that we come back into our bodies, which is so important. And in order to help us do that, you may stretch or cradle your head or roll your shoulders, whatever works for you to just feel and be in your body and be in touch with what surfaces and how is all of this landing in you or on you, right? So I think we have an idea of what depression is, but let's talk about some of these. I'm looking to Maria. Would it be useful to talk about some of the risk factors?
For sure, Sabra. And I also wanted to hear from Stuart, so just put this one in your mind, Stuart, as a male, what the additional stigmas that you faced when seeking support around these mental health issues, because that's, you brought a point, Sabra, about stigma, and mental illness does face still a large one. Now there's a lot of campaigns out there trying to normalize and bring that to the forefront, but there's the added layer of being a man, also seeking support, being seen as weakness. So I just wanted to hear from Stuart about that, if he experienced that, and did it stop him from seeking support?
Good question. And yes, there's a lot of stigma regarding men still to this day. I don't think it's as bad as it used to be. But we're going back to what Sabra was talking about depression. Let me start from the beginning here again. I want to go back about probably 40 years ago. At that time, I was experiencing a great amount of loss, grief from the losses in my family. So one of the things I would do is I would isolate. And my employer would basically, what I would do is I would lock my door and you wouldn't see me for a couple of weeks. I know my employer, bless his soul, at that time was very patient with me, but they never asked me what was going on. And if I could recall, if anybody did ask me what was going on, my response would have been nothing and none of your business. And that was the end of it. So therefore, me being in depression and from my loss and my grief, my family, it was not good at all. I rather than talk to anybody, there was no, at that time, there was not really any place to reach out other than trying to reach out to a psychotherapist or a psychologist or anything like that. But I wouldn't have anything to do with it at that time. I was in my own headspace, and call me proud, call me whatever. It's really irrelevant now, but at the time, that's how I would cope with it. And one thing that really scared me too was I didn't want to get put on pills. To be honest with you, I did street drugs, and that was my coping with it because I did not want the clinical stuff. I'm not saying it was right or wrong, but that's how I dealt with it. Now, when I talk about today, well, obviously things change quite a bit. And you talk about loss and grief. Well, sure, I still have that day. Obviously, it's not as predominant as it was the time that I just described. But I still get that where I puts me into depression, not just from what's going on here now. I still have some losses that I know I'm never going to get back. But nevertheless, I found better coping mechanisms so that when I do think about it, I quickly change that thought process and hopefully doesn't drag me down too much into deep depression. It's really hard these days with what's going on, but being a male now and talking about depression or all the other things that are attached to it is really not so much of a big deal anymore. Me personally, anyway, I really don't really, give a, rat's poot or rat's ass about what anybody thinks. I just go ahead and I say now, because if I don't, who's gonna talk about it? Right? Especially from a male perspective. And I just keep pushing and pushing, and I'm here.
Thank you so much for sharing, Stuart. Really appreciate that, because I know there's a lot of men out there who are still afraid, based on societal stigma or how they were taught as children not to talk about their feelings or not share their feelings, or feelings were seen as moments of weakness. However, they internalize those unfold beliefs around male masculinity and what's healthy, what's not, really stops them from seeking support. So thank you for sharing your story. You're helping other men seek support.
And there's one more thing I want to throw in there along with that. And just so you know, I remember years ago, even before that experience, I remember I got a job, and I had attempted to take my life, and I lost my job. So I was actually scared the second time around when I got into this other job, and I stayed in that job for quite a long time before I moved on to the next trade, but I would not tell them what was going on with me in that fear that I'd lose my job. So I just wanted to fit in at that point. It's not so bad nowadays because if you can't use that against somebody because actually you can come back and fight that. But at that time, I could not fight that. If I said anything about it, I was worried about losing my job. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in.
Thank you so much for sharing your courage, Stuart, and your vulnerability. And as we talk about the gatehouse, vulnerability is strength. And for anyone watching out there, you are strong and you can seek support. And no one, especially through the gatehouse, is going to do for doing that. They're actually celebrating that. Thank you. I'm going to pass it back to Stavros and continue to discuss on depression.
Thank you so very much for sharing your experiences with us and also having the courage to share with us that you did think about suicide, because that can happen with individuals that are experiencing depression. So I want to say I thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart that you are here and that you had the courage and resilience that you recognized within yourself and made the decision to continue sharing your gifts with us. And what a contribution you are making through this. This is just one example. I know many other things that you are involved with. So thank you. Thank you, Stuart. Now, in terms of some of the risk factors, keep in mind that when you hear me mention some of these risk factors, that this is why it is so important to take a biopsychosocial approach to depression, which many clinicians do and don't. I know that Maria and I in our work, we do take a biopsychosocial because the risk factors are not only biological, they not only physiological. So what are some of the factors? So for example, one risk poses a person to clinical or major depression is family history. If one has blood relatives within depression, or depression or bipolar or alcoholism, PTSD or suicide, that can be one of those risk factors. The other one is personality traits, as some people call it. So if one is overly self-critical, pessimistic, and has a very low self-esteem. Now, many of us have what we call situational low self-esteem or lack of confidence, and we engage in criticizing ourselves. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about these thoughts, these cognitive beliefs of self and behaviors related to these beliefs that are persistent and over time. The other one is traumatic stressful events can also set oneself up for experiencing major depression. You heard Stuart, you heard Nicola, you heard from Maria, you heard from me about some of our experiences, whether it was losing a family member or family members. I mentioned significant other, I lost a family member, and that sort of grief, which then developed into a depression because the grief was not dealt with. So that was a traumatic event in my life. The other traumatic events are such as physical or sexual abuse, serious illness of oneself, experienced by self, or of a child, death and loss, difficult relationship, financial difficulties. Those can all be under the category of traumatic stressful event. Then there are environmental factors. In the environmental factors, again, it's like continuous poverty or exposure to violence, looking at discrimination, prejudices and discrimination like homophobia, racism, sexism. So those are some of the environmental factors that can also predispose one to clinical depression. Again, remember, these have to be persistent and ongoing. And when you think about environmental factors and you think about populations within the LGBTQ, the trans communities, racialized communities, violence of women in terms of because of the violence and sexism, misogyny in society, you can see how these kinds of experiences, physical, emotional, psychological, and the what we call microaggression will predispose one, especially if these are persistent, one to clinical depression. So they are the causes then are biological and physical. It could be brain chemistry, hormone changes. You know, talked about
sorry, Sabra, there seems to be a little bit of a technical issues. I don't know if you can hear me. It just went to mute there for a second. I'm not sure if your microphone might be on mute. Maybe, Sabra, if you leave the room and come back in, and Stuart and Nicola can share a little bit of some of the signs and symptoms from their own perspective, and then we'll try and figure out the technology.
Oh, no, technical difficulties, you got to love it.
Yeah. Love these technical difficulties live, but we can manage. Sabra will be back shortly. Yeah. Maybe Stuart and Nicola, if you want to jump in and just share a little bit about what was it like to experience depression and or grief and or loss for yourselves a little bit more while we wait for Sabra to come back in.
Go ahead.
Go on.
For me, it was like it's like I was on a hike with a 300-pound bag in my back, which I could barely carry. So basically, every step was a fight just to get to the next step. And then when I get tired, I have to sit down and start all over again. So depression throughout the years has been really, really hard on me emotionally and physically. I talk about the physical feelings along with it as well. And I would get it really, really badly in my stomach and in my chest, for example. And things I would do, like for example, even my legs. I would, when I'm sleeping, for example, my legs were moving. My legs were moving constantly, as a body reaction to my trauma from the past, not even realizing it. And but the body sensations and the physical sensations that went along with it, but the emotional toll of it alone, until I got help, was just pure hell. I mean, it's really hard to put words to. Was the emotional toll and the physical toll. Never mind, when I started to take care of myself and realize what was going on, but understanding how those emotions and the feelings of the body, how they were connected, why is this happening to me? I mean, I understand now why, but then I didn't understand. You know, I was too engulfed in my own misery, if I can use that terminology, because that's basically what it was, rather than, you know, when I did find it, you finally to be able to talk about my childhood sexual abuse, it all started to change. My horrible memories and my body tremors, as an example, the feelings in my body, they didn't just change overnight. It took quite a while and lots of talking, not just to myself, self-talk, but talking to other survivors and anybody who were out to listen to kind of figure that out and to kind of put these pieces together. Granted, now after all this time, I don't have those symptoms like I used to have, not to any great degree anyway, and I do get them. At least I've figured out a path to go to ground myself or to, you know, to change that thought process in some way I can or best way I can. And trust me, those skills that I learned to help myself did not come by me easily. You know, I was so stuck in my past, and every time I turn around, there's always something that, okay, that would pull me back there. You know, one of the biggest things I learned in my healing journey, my facilitators told me right from the beginning, was that, yeah, you're going to do like 20 steps forward, and you're going to probably do 100 steps backwards. Well, I'm telling you, I've been doing this journey for quite a long time now, and I'm pretty confident now that my steps forward are actually greater than my steps backwards. But trust me, it took a lot of work on my part just to sort that out, where I could have some kind of control of it so I could understand actually what I'm feeling, not just in my head, but in my body as well, and to come up with something that I can manage to some degree best I can possible. And that's what I would tell other survivors out there, too, that are sorting stuff out as well, is that you need to, once you understand these things and start piecing them back together, it all sort of seems to come together in your time, obviously, and not in anybody else telling you what time it's going to take in your time. Thank you. Did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I think when we were saying about signs and symptoms, for me, the signs and symptoms showed up as like lack of interest in doing anything. So like hobbies that you enjoy or things that you enjoy, connecting with, you know, your partner, your husband, whatever. And also lack of appetite. Or it can go the other way and you can overindulge. So I've had both. but certainly, you know, lack of actually wanting to connect, have an anxiety around socializing when you're forced to be put in that situation. That's how it shows up for me in signs and symptoms. But then more so recently, I'm grieving the loss of a parent within the last 3 years. The symptoms in my body, and especially around the thoracic region, around my heart center, was where that would show up for me, even in days where I wasn't really recognizing that. So, yes, thank you.
Oh, Des is back. Can't hear you, though. Sabra, sorry. I mean, we can't hear you, Sabra.
Strange.
Might be the microphone icon. I know I have one on my screen, and if we have it on, press M. Mine says press M for mute, so I wonder how to unmute it. We're learning mute technology. All good. I'm sure we'll figure it out. No, not yet, Sabra.
There's a little microphone thing on the very first icon under the screen. Might be that.
Yeah, can you press the M key? I pressed M and it unmuted. Let's try that. See if that helps. No.
Strange.
Maybe going back in, going back out, coming back in. But no, same thing.
Well, that really sucks.
Of life broadcast.
All right. Sabra, if you can leave the meeting and then try to come back in one more time. Okay, so we'll wait for Sabra to do that. But just to touch upon the fact that you sound, both of you sound alleviation of the symptoms by, once you started doing more work on yourself, seeking support, research, finding out what's happening with you, is really a great indicator. And Stuart, I love how you mentioned the point about the facilitators telling you, you know, you're taking 100 steps forward or 100 steps back, you're going back and forth. It's okay, because as we know at the Gatehouse, we talk about healing is not a linear process. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times survivors will come forward with the expectation that, okay, so I'm going to do this group and I'm going to be healed at the end, right? This is going to be great. I'm going to be done with all the trauma. I'm going to have it in the past. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to forgive. I'm going to do all this. And sometimes it's great. It happens. And a few years later, we have survivors return to the gates and redo our phase one or phase two programs or do other or facilitate a group. Because again, healing is not a linear process. And we have to be kind and empathetic with ourselves, and not judge ourselves for not moving as quickly as we anticipate or expect, right? Okay. I'm just going to see if Sabra's back on. I think trying it on her phone. Let's see. Sabra, can we? Oh, there we go. There's some audio.
Yeah, I'm doing it on my phone.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for your patience. Thank you, Stuart and Nicola, as well. Again, we're learning from each other.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if Sabra can take us through the remaining portion of her discussion.
And maybe so turn your phone the other way.
This way?
No, the other way.
The other way.
There we go.
No, you were there. That's it.
That's it.
It looks like it's not exactly on mine.
Barely.
Sabra, sorry, can you flip your phone again? Yeah, like that. I think that would be the best. I'm going to take us off the screen.
Okay.
There we go. Okay. Well, thank you, Sabra.
Thank you, and I'm sorry for this technical glitch. I did manage to hear what Nicola and Stuart shared with us in terms of systems, and I'm so glad that you did hear that. I'm not going to go over all the symptoms. You're absolutely right that they are symptoms that fall into the biophysiological realm. And you mentioned about being tired, persistent sadness, meditation, restlessness, like, you know, your muscles. So those are wonderful thoughts that you have shared. And it also gives me a chance to bring up a couple of myths that are related to depression. One of the myths is that, oh, you know, you hear people saying, you'll get over it. Or they just say, get over it, snap out of it. Well, depression does not mean that you are crazy or you are weak or there's something wrong with you. So let's talk about it. Let's seek the help we need. The other myth related to depression is that only women get depressed. And that's why hearing from Stuart was so important. And I thank you, Maria, for asking Stuart to share his perspective on this. The last thought that while I was dealing with the technical issues, and Stuart and Nicola mentioned some of the symptoms. So depression, some people think, and this is a myth, that depression causes only mental symptoms. Absolutely not. We can experience physical symptoms, for example, fatigue, headaches, body aches, digestive issues. So please keep that in mind. And if you are experiencing this on a protracted basis for over time, then discuss it with your medical doctor. So we talked about some of the risk factors. We talked about some of the symptoms. And in the interest of time, I think it would be very, very important to talk about what are some of the supportive approaches that one can seek. So I'll start off with the typical ones. One is they could be, you can seek help from your medical doctor. So medication. And I mentioned earlier that taking a biopsychosocial approach is very important. Most doctors would take a bio, but sometimes for depression, you do need the bio aspect of it from a pharmacological perspective, because if it is chemical based, if it is hormonal based, sometimes a medical prescription can really help. Make sure, though, that you discuss the possible side effects with your doctor or pharmacist. And don't stop taking prescribed antidepressants without discussing it with your physician. The other approach is counseling and psychotherapy, which we usually call talk therapy. I prefer many instances, not in all, but that it should be both, the medical and talk therapy, because often people with severe depression, you need both the interventions in and the combination of these interventions of medication and talk therapy seem to have better results, and also in terms of the overall long-term effects for the person in terms of coping. And there are alternative medicines as well. You might have heard of so-called naturopathic, this St. John's wort, omega-3 fatty acid, vitamin D. But I would again suggest that you talk these options over with a trained professional. Now, are called what in our practice refer to as integrative treatments for clinical depression, and is where we will.
The last year.
We've lost Sabra's feed again. I'm sure she'll be back soon. It's probably a Wi-Fi issue. When she's talking about integrative treatments, I believe she's talking about a combination of drugs, like a psychotherapist or in a psychiatrist work together, a medical doctor. So you're looking at your bio needs, your psychological needs, and your social needs too. So peer support falls under the umbrella of social network. My apologies, Sabra. I just gave a brief overview. I'm not sure if you heard any of that. It's just the internet went down a little bit. You were just at the point of an integrative approach.
Right. Okay. So I think I might have mentioned these, but I talked about the medical approaches, the talk therapy, you got that, right? So in terms of the integrative, usually are ones that are related to mind and body work, so doing visualization, practicing gratitude, spirituality, massage therapy, acupuncture, and not forgetting exercise, because I have learned so much through doing some training in the neuropharmacological effects on the brain and working with depression and other medical issues. So exercise is a very, very important one too, because that helps in terms of our brain chemistry, and that in turn helps our mood, in turn helps our body and our feelings. So exercise, it could be aerobic, it could be dancing, it could be yoga, it could be walking, it could be running, whatever that helps you increase the dopamine and serotonin in one's body. And I think I'll turn it over to you, Maria. I've lost track of time, and I just hope that we covered what was essential, and perhaps we'll touch on things as we go along over this year with different programs.
For sure. Thank you so much, Sabra, for being here today and sharing all that you've shared. One of the things that I thought about as you were speaking about the different types of treatment and the integrative treatment, especially using a combination, because as you mentioned before, like, there is a definition in the psychiatric diagnosis manual for mental disorders, right? But not everyone fits that exact definition. Not everyone fits the exact presentation of depression. Mm-hmm. And not all solutions that are available out there will work for each individual, right? So they have to find what works for them, whether it be a combination of medication with exercise, with psychotherapy, with peer support, with other modalities, yoga, mindfulness. There's so many things out there. I think the message is that there is support. Have to do this alone. Jump in.
I really like that. You don't have to do it alone. But one of the major, major factors in helping one cope, manage, and overcome depression is breaking isolation. That is so important. And I always tell individuals that I'm working with, and so I would share this with the audience, always remember, you are braver than you believe. and stronger than you seem or think, especially since, and I get this from a Stuart story just to remind me of this, especially since I've had, you have hope and the resilience to make it so far, so you can, with the help of others, make it further.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Sabra, for sharing and being here today. And thank you, Stuart, for having us on your program again to talk about this very important issue. I'm going to pass it back to Stuart, who's going to do the closing for today's episode. And Nicola, again, thank you, Sabra, and we look forward to working together again on different topics. I know we talked about shame and guilt in one of them, and self-harm and suicide prevention in future. We're going to be coming back on here to talk about. I'm going to pass it back to Nicola. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Nicola, Sabra, Maria. Sabra and Maria, thank you so much. You gave a lot of things that are what some people may not consider to be important, but we don't think about those things. So you added a tremendous amount of insight to the topic of depression today. Depression, anxiety, all the things that are attached to it. We have some exciting programs coming up in the future. So please stay tuned, watching what's going on, and we're always posting stuff. Folks across Canada, I'm part of a great place that helped me, helped myself, the Gatehouse. We are taking on participants, but if you're in Canada, and we're all doing this all by now, everything is all done by until this COVID thing is all blown over. I'm putting this out there to you, Canada, people in Canada, that if you're seeking help, come check out our website, and maybe we can help you with your CSA. But folks, after talking today and what we've been talking about, we've brought some triggers up for you. I have no idea. Remember to take the time for self-care. Go for a walk. Do whatever it takes to get your mind off those troubles and frustrations of those nasty thoughts that might be going through your head. Folks, take care. Have a good night. Have a good week. And we'll be back to join you shortly, which will keep you posted. So, folks, take care. Have a good night. And well, good weekend too is coming up. So
yes,
good night,
absolutely.
And
bye bye.
Okay,
never give up.
You have anything you want to add in?
No, just that. Never give up.
Okay, bye, folks.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.